the cut bill. As we went over it on Tuesday, and I asked people to let me know if there are any issues or any concerns or any changes that we wanted to make. And we have, first of all, we have just a technical amendment because we put this bill together so quickly that staff found a few things, and that's the A5. So I think we already have the A5 amendment. Yeah. Mr. Fuller, did you want to just explain it?
Madam Chair, members, on line 1.2 and 1.3, we had a 2010 an appropriation, so we need an immediate effective date. And then the rest of the language essentially just separates a compound clause and makes it into two clauses. There's no change in wording. It just turns to a lengthy clause into two clauses with the same words, so it's more understandable. And
that's on 1.2 and 1.3?
That, no, 1.2 and 1.3 is the immediate effective date.
Okay.
1.5 to 1.13 is what I just explained with respect to simplifying a compound clause into two simple clauses.
So it's just in the title?
No, this is in the text.
Oh, I'm sorry, page 3. Page 3. Okay.
Page 9.
Right,
and then
right.
On
figure it out yet.
Line 14 and 15 amendment. It corrects, I believe that's the budget base for MinSKU and University of Minnesota to account for what's happened since the bill last year, the appropriation bill,
okay.
Because there have been changes.
What was on page 9, 111? What was that one again?
Page 9, that was had to do with fees. And they had a fee for $750 for two separate sorts of institutional activity, and it was very long. And it was the same fee, $750, was kept for each one, but instead of all being in Clause 3, one was in Clause 3, and the other one was put in Clause 4.
Okay. Just to clarify. Okay, any questions? Okay. Then Senator Clark moves the A5 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Okay, so the other issue that was brought to my attention had to do with the appropriation line for operation and maintenance and the central office for MinSKU. I'm looking for Senator Erickson Ropes in particular brought this to my attention. Make sure this does what she wants to do.
Did you already separate them out?
It's line 7 through 21. And it goes back to current law. But where does that show up in the bill? So the original language, in the original, in the statute, it has these two as separate. We wanted to. Okay. Senator Erickson Ropes, did you want to say anything? Well, I'm just talking to Mr. Fuller that this make sure this accomplishes what your intention was, to go back to current law where you have two separate line items for the central office and for operation and maintenance.
Yes, Madam Chair. And I believe that if we're looking at Article 1, Section 4, that would be removing the language in lines 3.7 to 3.18, and that would accomplish that purpose. Is that right, Mr. Fuller?
Madam Chair, all the way to
3.21.
Okay. Because, Madam Chair, Senator Ropes, the effort is to make sure that there's a proportional allocation of the cuts as between those two items. So, in a sense, we don't go back to the old law. We are saying, I mean, we are in spirit, but the cut is representing the bill as one number, And then this rider language that you're offering is saying, okay, if you look at the total appropriation last year to central office and operation and maintenance, you sum that up,
mm-hmm.
and then you take what share that central office had of that and what share OAM, the cuts for this year should be approximately proportionate to that share that each had last year and not be 100% one and 100% the other. So that's what this language does.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Fuller.
Madam Erickson Ropes.
And mm-hmm. Madam Chair, just to clarify, Mr. Fuller, then when you're talking about proportional shares, are we talking about, related to the OLA's report that the central office spends about $1 out of $8 there, so we're looking at 1/8 to 7/8 proportional cuts?
Madam Chair, Senator Ropes, just as an example, yes, if there was, say there was $100 million that went last year in total from the general fund to the operations and maintenance and central office, so there was $100 million total, and of that, central office got $20 million, or let's say $12 million, okay? Mm-hmm. So the cuts now, so that's 1 in 10. So we're articulating a cut in the bill of $10,467,000. This language would say that central office should receive 1/10 of that cut, be allocated approximately, and the operation and maintenance would get 90% of that cut because that would be a proportion to what they got last year. So the reduction would be a proportion to what they got to each other last year. That's what this does.
So members, in my original draft, I did leave it to the Board of Trustees to decide how to apportion the cut. And This may be a little too strict. I don't know. I did think that they should have a little flexibility, that it wouldn't be exactly. It does say approximate the proportion each received. Because remember, the central office doesn't get any tuition revenue, and the central office also pays for all the presidents on all the campuses, as well as, you know, the backbone of technology for the system. So I think we should talk about this, the approach in the original bill, the approach in Senator Erickson Ropes' amendment. Is there something in between that we want to consider? And maybe we should hear from, if there's anyone here from Minsky that would like to speak on this. Ms. King, would you like to talk about this? Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, and good afternoon to members. I was listening very carefully to the conversation to make sure I was tracking.
Do you have a copy of the amendment?
Intent. I do, thank you. If the intent is for the Office of the Chancellor to take what we characterize as our fair share of the state appropriation reduction, if that's what this language is designed to accomplish, we're prepared to do that. We've made that commitment internally. In our math, that's about $1 million against the $10 million cut. So that's completely consistent with our intention. The chair knows, I think, that our preference would be to have the language as currently in the bill. That was the Senate position last year, and we supported the Senate position. We have interpreted the Senate historical position to be one of confidence in the administration of the office, and we've heard no evidence to give concern to that confidence. We've heard very positive remarks from this committee about the work of the administration and the system as a whole, and I think you'll find in reviewing the report recently submitted by the Office of the Legislative Auditor, similarly very positive remarks about the work of the office, the services that we provide to the campuses, and in fact, they make recommendations there for us to examine opportunities for additional centralization and shared services as another step towards efficiency. So our preference would be the Senate position as it was first proposed last year and the bill as it's before the committee now, but the amendment completely conforms to our intentions.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Roebling.
Thank you. Ms. King, I paid a lot of attention to the legislative auditor's recommendations, too, and in general, it was a positive report. And one of the things, as you just mentioned, was that there may be some more things that you could do to increase efficiencies for all the campuses. One of them, I would think, was payroll.
Correct.
If you take this cut, and but then maybe we expect you to take on more duties to increase your efficiency, do you then have the funding to do that, or would you assess the campuses something for that, or how would you handle that? Because we know we're going to have to squeak out as many efficiencies in the system as we possibly can, and we don't want to tie your hands in creating those efficiencies if we don't. I mean, we should try and avoid that.
I appreciate that.
I'm wondering how you could take on some additional work. And there were a couple things, though, that maybe should be looked at and even dropped in the
sure.
report. So how would you balance that?
Ms. King.
Madam Chair and Senator, I really appreciate that observation, because we are very interested in the opportunities that exist for us to use our size to leverage some efficiencies in operations. There was a very long list in the report released by the Office of the Legislative Auditor of areas that they encouraged us to look at, including payroll, financial aid administration, accounts receivable administration, accounts payable, all the back office functions that are far from the student and far from the student experience, but at some of our smaller campuses are quite an operational burden. And you see in the reports that we get from the financial audit section of the legislative auditor that we have had a sort of a constant effort to keep operations with internal control and accountability. One of our concerns about the bill structure as it now stands is that it drives us toward process design that's sort of artificial. With the language as it's proposed and as we have it last year, we would have to create some kind of an artifice to finance additional services outside of this number. And we might create some new cost center that sits at a campus and move money between colleges and universities to that cost center to pay the expenses. We might create some kind of a fee. I frankly don't know. And it's a concern I have, is that it just creates another sort of design hurdle for us, because we think there's opportunity there, and we're in the midst of a strategic planning process right now and studying the OLA report and expect it to have recommendations for us that we'd like to implement. And we just worry that the appropriation language is a constraint that we'd have to find a way to live with.
The other area that I would like you to look into, which probably does fall under the shared services idea, is bulk purchasing. I'm interested in how much you do bulk purchasing your own for everyone in the system, how much you use the Department of Administration for bulk purchasing, and how much you use the Midwest Higher Education Compact.
Madam Chair, we are really very aggressive procurement design folks already. We have probably a dozen contracts in place that all the campuses participate in. We're very heavy users of all the joint powers agreements that are out there, either with MEC or with state and local governments. They have joint powers agreements. We're very aggressively into it. We have a group of campus folks that meet monthly to work on the next idea to pursue. Mm-hmm. So we've been doing that for several years,
okay.
And we will continue to do it.
Okay, that's good to hear. Senator Erickson-Robes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I again would appreciate, or just want to express appreciation to the universities and the MNSCU system, and in honor that trusted relationship that has existed, and yet at the same time still advocate for going back to this split out in the budgeting, the line items, because of some of the concerns that were listed, you know, in the OLA report. And I hear from my constituents in southeastern Minnesota quite often about the largest growing campus in the state MNSCU system being the central office, and to not even have a line item for that expense, I think is just, it compels us to break this out again. I think it worked well in the past. Gives us better oversight over tracking where those cuts are made. I believe in other divisions, we track very carefully where administrative expenses are, and we have line items all over the place in many other divisions that we don't use here in the University and Minsku budgeting arena. So I think it's a reasonable request to break those line items out again so we can track where the money goes.
Madam Chair, Senator Ropes, I would only observe that I don't think there's evidence to support the notion that the growth has been without relationship with the campuses. The Chancellor's Office budget from 08 to 09 took a 5% cut internally without any legislative direction, while the colleges and universities had no budget cut. And from 9 to 10, we took a cut in the Chancellor's Office of 2% when the campuses were growing by 3%. I think the Chair's observation about tuition revenue is really important. It's certainly true that we have only state appropriation to support the Chancellor's Office, but it's also worth noting that the relationship between state appropriation and tuition crossed over several years ago, and tuition is now almost 50% more in total revenue than state appropriation. So campuses have access to resources well beyond that's available in the Chancellor's Office, and you can get some distorted numbers without that acknowledgement. We're very interested and prepared and willing at a moment's notice to come and talk to the committee and be held completely accountable. So I wouldn't want you to think otherwise. We just would like to preserve our ability to be flexible and make operating and design decisions as the times are changing. But with that said, the amendment is completely consistent with our intention.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, I liked the bill as it was originally, although I understand if they're not objecting too loudly, it might be okay to do this. But I still think that in this time when we are going to have to reinvent and redesign and do a lot of things differently to get as much efficiency out of systems as we possibly can, we should also have a lot of flexibility. And I understand it's a trust issue. And, you know, sometimes we have some animosity between employers and employees, and I think we might be seeing a little bit of that right now. I've received some of the emails as well, and yet I don't know that we have seen a real strong reason to mistrust central office in making decisions. So I'm having a little trouble supporting your amendment, Senator Erickson Ropes, just because I think flexibility is really important right now.
Ms. King, while we have you there, could you give us a little update on what the intention is or what the plan is for salary increases?
Madam Chair, from fiscal 9 to fiscal 10, we have labor contracts all in place. The overall increase online, I think, is less than 1% in total. Most of our employees are in collective bargaining units, AFSCME, MAPE, MMA, the state university faculty and the community college faculty. And so those agreements are in place. I can get you the LCER sheet if you'd like that shows some of the contracts are going up less than 0.5% over the biennium. Others are going up between 1% and 1.5%.
What about administrators?
Administrators, if you'll give me a moment to pull my sheet. I bolt my binder there. I have it here with me, Madam Chair. I just don't want to pull a number out of the air. I have every number you could possibly want, except maybe that sheet. I might have to get back to you.
Okay.
Apologies.
But, you know, ballpark, has the board had a policy about, given that the employee units have settled for a freeze or zero increase, have they developed a policy in general about what salary increases are going to be, if any?
Madam Chair, the administrator's plan is already in place, mm-hmm. So it's all been settled. It was settled right in line with the other contracts. Mm-hmm. So let me just step back for a second and dig out my piece of paper, and
okay.
I'll be able to answer you.
All right. Then
Senator Pappas.
We'll come back to you. Senator Sharon.
You know, I do think this is a difficult thing to be talking about because it gets down to do you trust us or don't you trust us, and he starts to talk about things in that language. But what I'm dealing with, and I have a lot of campuses in my district, both public and private, and for profit too as well. And what they're seeing, and I saw for Minnesota State Mankato a layout of how they're dealing with the budget cuts and the cuts that are occurring to important programs, eliminating programs, eliminating numerous faculty because they're dealing with these budget deficit, as they take their share of the cuts and try to calculate them. And there is a concern that the further in a centralized system, the further you get away from all of that, that there is an increasing sense of loss of confidence. Look at the relationship of the people to the federal government, you know, and that they are making decisions that really appreciate the experience of the person on the street. So I do think that those who are on the street in this system are concerned that they're taking the pain, they're experiencing the pain, and that they're not seeing the layoffs or the cuts or the reductions in the size of the employees in the central office system, that it's the campuses that are carrying a disproportionate share of the pain in terms of responding to this. And they're asking us to help communicate that to the central office. So, you know, I do listen to that. I understand, I'm not unwise. I don't think that everybody's individual complaint should be responded to at the legislative level, but that there's balance in that process. We're also asking the campuses to do things. We're not just asking the central office to do things in terms of how they might be able to do things better. We're asking the campuses to do an enormous amount of things with less resources as well. So we're really, I'm not talking about trust, I'm talking about balance. And there was a something said, I don't know who said it, about whether or not you were getting any negative feedback or not, that generally you're getting positive feedback, and I think that that's true. But I was trying to communicate, at least through my questions, that where I am unclear and uncertain is whether or not there's an adequate, if the oversight role that the Minsku board plays in this system is holding the central system accountable, and are they engaged in that actively enough, and do they have the capacity to do that, given that they might be having other jobs or doing other work, and which is one of the things somebody said, remember, they work in other jobs primarily. But we have an expectation that there is an oversight process going on, and the board, we rely on the board to do that, but we also have an oversight responsibility. So I can't carte blanche hand off. I have to be restrained. I have to allow the system to work, but I am not willing to completely let go and just cross my fingers and hope that things are going well with the central system. When I'm not certain, I'm not confident that the board has communicated to me that they're confident that they are able to spend enough time and enough energy to create the kind of oversight that we need to have through the system.
Ms. King.
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, I'm a little, there's not much I can respond to in that. I appreciate you sharing your perspective on it. It's very interesting to us when we hear that there's such a difference of opinion internally, because we work so hard to communicate internally. We have a leadership council that we just spent 2 days with. We all communicate with our campus counterparts on a daily basis. Part of what we're fighting here is perception, and that's a difficult one for us. If you look at the headcount in the chancellor's office over the last several years, actually going back to 2002, if you hold off the technology investment from that analysis, the headcount's flat. Enrollment's gone up almost 50% during that time period. The policy and service headcount is flat. Technology, absolutely. There's been an increase in technology staff. But we're providing technology services for the whole system. So it's hard for us to sort out just what's at the heart of the issue. We do what we can to communicate. We thought the OLA report was very instructive. There was very good feedback in that report about the things that the campuses were concerned about, and were responding to that very aggressively. So beyond that, I appreciate your comments.
Ms. King, my staff reminds me that we have you coming in next week to talk about compensation, so don't worry about digging around
and
for
Judy
that.
Judy can stop digging for the
piece of paper. I'll just hold my questions till. I'll just hold my questions till next week. Any other comments on the A4 amendment? Okay. Senator Erickson-Ropes then renews her motion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay.
No.
Nay.
Division.
All those in favor, raise your hand. All those opposed? Okay, motion does not prevail. Sorry, I thought that was going to pass. Even with me voting no. Okay, the other issue, for members who are concerned about this, we know we still have to have a conference committee with the other body, and so I think it's still going to be an issue in conference committee. The other issue that came to our attention had to do with the proposal in the Senate bill for financial aid rationing, and frankly, once I saw some of the runs with our proposal and our bill, I thought it was worthwhile for the committee to take another look at it to see if there's another approach we might want to take, to look at the approach brought to us by the Office of Higher Education, to compare that with the Senate approach, and then look at a third option. And if we have an amendment to do that if we want to, but let's pass out the spreadsheets. Is he passing them out? The chart. I meant the chart. Give it to me first. Here's the, who's guessing on the chart? I'm telling you, you should always give it to me first.
That's right. Okay,
Swibman, maybe you should go over it rather than me. You probably would do a better job.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if you kind of look at this chart, it lays out three ways that we can deal with the state grant and the state grant rationing. If you look at the Senate 1, those two columns in the center, that is basically what is currently in the bill, where we had the discussion on Tuesday that we wanted to protect the students in the lowest income category. So you can see there that when it's the change in base, that would basically say that at the Minsky two-year, four-year schools, U of M and privates, that any students that came from a family with an income of $20,000 or less, they would basically get the same dollar amount as they had that they would get under current law. And if you look under the current law column there, that would show what they would receive with both Pell and state grant. And then as you go down, you can see what the change would be at different income levels at each institution type, the Minsky 2, the Minsky 4, U of M, and privates. And then if you go over to the proposal that was put forth by the governor and the Office of Higher Education, the proposal there was to eliminate And if you remember when we went over the spreadsheet, we discussed this, to eliminate the ninth semester and eliminate the summer transition grants and then ration by what's currently in statute, where you would divide it between the student responsibility and the family responsibility. And you'll see there what those changes would be. You'd increase the student responsibility from 46 to 47.9, and you'd put a 17% surcharge on the family responsibility. And then again, if you look at that change from base column and you follow it all the way down, it'll show you what the change would be, and in this case is obviously a reduction in the amount of combined Pell and state grant that students would receive. And then finally, if we go to the Senate 2, those two columns, when we look at those, this would basically distribute the cuts more evenly across the different students at the different institutions. And what we would do there is we would still keep the ninth semester, we would still keep the summer transition grants, and then we would ration according to what is in statute, where you divide the rationing evenly between between the student responsibility and the family surcharge. So there we'd be going from the student responsibility from 46 to 48.25, and the surcharge would go up to 20.5. And so there, as you follow the change from base column, you can see that obviously those students in that lowest income group will now also lose some money. But then as you move up the income scale, up the income ladder there, you'll see that it softens the reductions as you move up.
So members, when I looked at the, I hadn't seen really the chart before, and when I looked at it, I felt like students who come from families of $30,000 or $40,000 are still students that are struggling. Those are not wealthy families. And it was a small cut to the lowest income students, but it kind of softened the impact. It's kind of a halfway between the OHE and the Senate 1 proposal. So the somewhat higher income family students were not seeing such a severe cut.
Madam Chair?
So, yes, Senator Roebling.
Were we always going to keep the ninth semester? I thought we talked about not keeping it.
No, we had always planned to keep the ninth semester. Certainly the OHE and the governor proposed cutting it. I would like to keep it. I think it's still a real issue, especially with the four-year colleges and the University of Minnesota, who, yes, we want them to have a better graduation rate than they have, but while they're working on improving the graduation rate, and I think there's work going on, I think it's value to make sure that those students graduate and not have them quit before, you know, the last, at the very end, because they can't afford it anymore.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Roebling.
And I don't know if any runs were done with, I see that the OHE one was done without those programs, the summer transition.
It would be fairly close to that number because the summer transition program is only costing us $1 million. So it would be fairly close to that. Any other questions or comments? What is the committee? What do you think we should do? What's your recommendation? So I'm really leaving it up to you. That I personally thought that the Senate one, when I looked at the runs, was too severe, and thought that the Senate 2 was kind of a compromise between those. And yes, Senator Clark.
Madam Chair, I'm glad you did the runs because it certainly is more harsh than I thought it was, too. And the costs are significantly more at the U and at the private schools. And we've been really proud of the fact we have a variety of places that our students can go. And I actually talked to Marianne Benninger, the president of St. Ben's, yesterday, and she was reminding me there's about 600 students that are able to be there in part because of these grants. And so I like the approach that you've brought forward better than the other. I think I would have been a little sticker shocked when I found out afterwards what we might have done.
It really is hardship for our students for next year, where we have such a severe shortage in the state grant. We're only doing this for 1 year, so we can revisit it again next year. And if we don't get any more money in the state grant, we still will probably have to make some changes next year. But we can certainly look at a different approach, see how this works. Senator Clark.
Madam Chair, I think that while we're certainly in general trying to figure out ongoing reductions we can do, I don't think anybody on this committee wants to see ongoing reductions in that important piece. So hopefully the economy will get a bit better. But if we're serious about making sure our students are competitive globally, we've got to be mitigating what we're doing here. And let's face it, over the last decade, there's been an awful lot of hits to our students and our institutions. So I think that's good as well.
Now, this study is, this comparison is for a family size of 3. So if you have a larger family and you have more children in college, these numbers will, for these higher income people, obviously it would be different, would come out different. The other thing that we passed out was a comparison between the dependent and the independent students. And I've had an ongoing concern about our independent students who get no family support at all. And actually, the Senate one proposal would have really helped them a lot because they have no family contribution. And, you know, we're not going to be able to help them quite as much if we went with the Senate 2 proposal.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Tomasoni.
Students have an opinion?
The students are certainly free to express their opinion for us publicly if anyone would like to. When I've talked to them in my office, they've mostly said preserve the state grant. They're concerned about any cuts to the state grant. We can ask them. I don't know if they've seen it. Have we had the charts available for the audience, too? Yes? They're here at the end of the table? Okay. And I think Mr. Cirkvenik also wanted to comment, but please join us.
Madam Chair and members, for the record, my name is Graham Allen. I'm the Government Relations Director for the Minnesota State University Student Association. Haven't seen this kind of proposal before. I think I'd probably want to take it back to our people and kind of have some further conversations about it. I have my personal preference right now, but I want to talk to my people first.
And Madam Chair and members, I'm Travis Johnson, the Vice President of the 2-Year Student Association, the Minnesota State College Student Association. And as you know, there was a lot of students here last week at the Capitol talking with several of you about these same issues. And in just looking at this chart briefly, since we haven't seen it, we'll also analyze the scenarios and get back to what we feel is most important. But definitely preserving the state grant is key on our agenda. So.
Okay. And I don't think I gotten any feedback from you on our original bill that we passed on Tuesday. Did you have any comments on that?
I think it was tough for us to, you know, pick and choose. Which students are you going, you know, based on the calculations and formulas.
And we hadn't really seen the chart.
Right. You know, from our knowledge of how, you know, the different levers in the state grant formula work, you know, it was basically which students are you picking to have less money than others. So, you know, no solution was great. It's just out of necessity that's going on. But we'd probably want to take this back and kind of look at our numbers and really, you know, talk to students that are at a 20% income, a 30% income, or $40,000 income, just to get a kind of a feel. No solution is the best solution.
Right. And we are on kind of a fast track here, but we will have, certainly the sooner you can get back to us, the better. I think we'll have this bill, if it passes out of here, in full finance on Monday.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Cirkvenik? Who's the guy who retired? Mr. Cirkvenik is the new David Laird. We all know David.
Madam Welcome. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify on this. I want to start by saying thank you for preserving the state grant program. I know you've heard that message from a wide variety of people, and we recognize that this is a difficult year. There's no easy choices. All your options are difficult ones. And we appreciate that you've found a way to not have to impose additional cuts in the grant program and to make these the rationing that's going to have to occur this year be a one-time rationing approach, and your willingness to take a look next year and find out where we're at. With respect to the two options that you have before the committee in this chart, we would think that Senate option number two is the option that most fairly distributes the burden of these cuts across the spectrum of low-income students that are qualifying for grants. I would just say that what we hear from our college is that there's a point somewhere at which the cut in a grant will be so severe that the student will decide that they can't return. Of course, our schools are going to do what they can to reduce these impacts, but none of them are in a position to completely eliminate the cut that's going to be here. And given the two options, we think Senate 2 is the one that is fairest among all students. And, of course, all these families are families that would really be challenged to have their kids in college without the state grant program.
Yeah, it's difficult. None of these cuts do we want to make. And, of course, if in conference committee we did lose the ninth semester, that $4 million could get plowed back into the state grant, so that would be spread out among everyone.
And we recognize that that those programs do good things, but in this time of need, it's a reasonable consideration to delay that funding for 1 year also.
Any questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to testify? Mr. Moustakonis, you're on the list, but I didn't know if you wanted to comment. Okay. Okay. Would anyone like to move the A6 amendment? The A6 amendment would then be the Senate 2 position, basically. Senator Tomasoni? Okay, any other comments or questions? All right, Senator Tomasoni moves the A6 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. I think that's for today. We're done early. On Ms. Ryan, what's the plan for Tuesday?
Madam Chair, we are still looking at the plan for Tuesday, but... the intention is to hear the agency's policy bill,
okay,
and also to hear Senator Clark's Minsky transfer bill.
Okay. And any other policy bills that we have to get out for the policy deadline.
That's correct.
Okay, and as I mentioned, this article, I think we have to have a motion to send the article then to Finance Committee. I could almost adjourn the meeting before we did that. Does anyone like to make that motion?
Sure.
Senator Lynch? Okay. Senator Lynch and Senator Roebling together. Move that Article SC7615-1 as amended be recommended to pass and re-refer to the full Finance Committee. Any discussion? All right. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. And with that, the committee is adjourned.